Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Good Thursday to you and welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast, as the man just said. I'm James Sharman, John Molinaro's here as well.
Hello.
In what's going to be a really big weekend for Canadian soccer. Now, I've heard people talking via social media saying it's the biggest weekend in Canadian soccer. Chill. Look, this time last year, Vancouver and Montreal were both in the conference semifinals.
That's right.
They both lost, but let's give some respect to our Western friends here. And just because Toronto's involved doesn't mean it's the biggest weekend in Canadian club soccer history. It's still big, though.
Still very big. Yeah, absolutely.
And for you, I know for you it's pretty special, because not only is it a huge weekend with MLS getting some press, it comes the same week.
I see where you're going with here.
J-Mo's been on Twitter this morning making some comments here and there. And if you know J-Mo, you get them. But he's very happy boy because there's no more baseball as of today.
We're free of baseball until April, so I'm very happy.
Hate to break it to you, pal, but there's a lot of free agency talk, a lot of trade talk. There's going to be no shortage of baseball.
No games are being played. That's all I care about.
But it is, of course, a really fun weekend, especially for me and J-Mo, because we're going to New York this weekend, though, for all MLS fans. Toronto FC taking on New York City FC, and, of course, the Montreal Impact up against New York Red Bulls, and both Canadian teams winning in the first leg, 2-0 for TFC, 1-0 for Montreal. Let's start by heading to our man in the know in Montreal. Sportsnet's Kelsey Patterson joins us. Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Man in the know. I like that.
Yeah, well, prove it to us. You got about 15 minutes to prove it.
I'll say one thing. You said Vancouver, Montreal last year, Toronto, Montreal this year. Well, that means Montreal back to back. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. They are obviously the big club now in Canada.
Yeah.
Right? Most successful in recent years, certainly. But this Montreal team, they back into the playoffs. They scrape in there. They're up against a very good, informed DC team. They smack them. They then go to, take on New York in Montreal, a very good New York team in great form. They beat them. What has been the turning point for this team?
Listen, they've been looking for a right formation and a right starting 11 for a long time now. And I'm going back in time a little bit. I'm talking Frank Klopas days, where we were playing 4-2-3-1 with, DeVayo up top and then Drogba up top. But it's always been a 4-2-3-1. And Biello tried it. When Biello became the coach, he tried it. And he tried it this season. And it just never really worked. And the starting 11 never really worked. And for much of the season, we never really had a right formation and a right starting 11. And I think, is it luck? Is it coincidence? Was it bound to happen? But you know what? For the last four or five games, they've got it. They've got their 4-3-3, something they refused to use for so long. They've got their 4-3-3, and they've got their starting 11, and it's just working. And like I said, is it luck? Is it coincidence? I don't know, but it's just at the right time for Mauro Biello.
Has to be said too, Kels, that one of the key figures in whatever you want to call it, transformation or whatever it is for Montreal, one of the key figures has been Ignacio Piatti. The Argentine for me has been one of the really unheralded players in MLS this year. What's been your take on his influence and what he means to this franchise?
I definitely think that he probably deserved recognition in the MVP category. I think he did what an MVP does, which is keep your team in the game when they're struggling and find a way to win and find a way to get points. And that's just what he does. I've always seen him as a bit of the, I guess you could call him the puppet master on that team. Just the way he opens up space when he gets the ball, the way he finds passes and finds players and create space as a result of it. And then you add on top of that his dribbling and his finishing. I think he's an all-around player. I've always had a slight issue with him that he probably holds on to the ball a little too long. Maybe we're nitpicking a little bit. I found it's been an issue in the past, less so in the last couple of games, which is really good. But the main thing is creating space when otherwise there wouldn't be or there shouldn't be, and he's able to do that. And other players just don't have that vision, I guess, that he has.
amidst the stars on this team, and you mentioned Piatti there, Mancosu we'll get to as well at some point. We know about the Didier Drogba story, which I'm sure we'll get to as well at some point. Mm. But we've got to talk about Patrice Bernier, can't we? I mean, this guy, he's 37 years of age, limited throughout the season, just 13 games started, I believe. But, you know, obviously injured for part of that. He started the last two games. What does this guy bring to the starting 11, both on and off the field?
Well, listen, I think if you'll allow me to go back in time again, I mentioned Klopas earlier and the kind of struggles that he was having with the formation. And one of the things that he just couldn't see was Patrice Bernier's ability and his skill and his charisma. And Patrice Bernier was left off that team, and honestly, it looked like it would be a sad retirement for him. And it's just been incredible how Biello has been able to notice what he has on the pitch and off the pitch, the kind of leadership that he brings, the calmness. And now, I don't think he was working very well in that 4-2-3-1, but now with the 4-3-3, playing with Donadel, Bernadello, I think it's just a combination of everything. But this guy's had that ability, I think, is what I'm trying to say. This guy's been able to do what he's doing now, but it just hasn't worked out because of formation, because of someone not noticing how good he was and how valuable he was. But finally, I think it's the perfect time, and it's the recognition that he deserves. And he's been great. With Donadel and Bernadello, he's been great.
So, Kels, we'll get to the big question. Where do you come down on this whole Drogba controversy?
I think I mentioned this to you, John. It depends what side of the bed I wake up on in the morning. Depends. That changes how I feel about Drogba. I mean, I flip-flopped. I initially defended him, right, because the fiasco all began with TFC when he refused to be on the bench and decided not to be in the 18. So I defended him when that initially happened because I thought that it was resolved, as Joey Saputo had told us, that the situation was resolved and he was back with the club. Then they mentioned the back injury, and I didn't believe it at first. Now, I believe he's maybe not injured, but I believe his back is hurting. At the same time, I think his back has probably been hurting for a little while. He's an older player. His knees are hurting as well. So I definitely think that there's an injury there. I don't think it's fabrication on his fault, on his part. But I definitely think that he's able to play. He's healthy enough to play. And I think he's able to contribute to this team. I don't think he's able to play 90 minutes. But I definitely think, as Biello thought that he should against Toronto, come in as a substitute in the second half, whether it's the 60th or the 65th, I think he can help this team greatly. He has to play some role on Sunday against the Red Bulls because he's so valuable to this team. He has to play some role. So I would hope that Biello will tell him that he's playing, that he's on the bench to start the game, and that there's a chance he comes on as a substitute. And I'm hoping that Drogba accepts this time because I think the team needs him.
Well, and he might even start because, you know, there was a report this week that Mancuso is carrying, I think it's a slight...
Hamstring,
is it? Yeah. So, I mean, if he might not be able to start, we'll get to Mancuso in a second, but if he can't, obviously they don't have many other options than Drogba, but can they go back to him in light of all that sort of happened in the past, you know, month or so?
I think you kind of have to because your other option is a young kid called Anthony Jackson-Amel, who's great. But I don't think he's good enough or experienced enough to lead this team in such an important game and on a ground that the Impact just can't win on. So as good as Anthony Jackson-Amel is, I don't think he's a starter just quite yet, and I don't think he's able to do it on what's basically one of the biggest games for the Impact. I do think if Drogba has to start, if he's asked to start, I think he can do it. I think he can play a big role with this team. Can he play a full hour? I don't think so. But if he's asked to do it, I think he can.
Not to rain on Montreal's parade here. It's a great story so far. They could go on and who knows, maybe win this thing. But mm-hmm. they are an aging team. I think 9 of 11 players last week were over 30. You mentioned Mancoso, he's 31. Drogba is, what, 30, 38 now?
38,
around
yeah.
there, yeah. So, I mean, he leaves that, drops the average age by about 6 years by my math. But looking forward past this season, do you expect this team to return generally as is constructed? Mancoso's on loan, of course. We assume Drogba's leaving. Or is it kind of, this is the chance with this group of players to make some real noise?
No, for this group as they are now, yeah, I definitely think that this is the chance. We don't know if Piatti's even coming back. If Piatti gets scooped up, and there'll be offers for Piatti for sure. If Piatti gets scooped up, well, you lose that maestro or that puppet master, as I call them. Good chance, let's say an extremely good chance that you lose Drogba, that Drogba doesn't come back. Let's say 99.9%, just so that I don't put it at a full 100. Bernier, potentially retirement, good chance there too. Donadel getting old as well. So, yeah, I think this group, no, we won't see this group again. But I don't think that means that the impact will kind of disappear from playoff contention because of it. I see the academy, and I see the kind of young players that they have, and it's extremely hopeful. But having said that, they do need to pick up a player or two of experience, because if they do lose guys like Piatti, Mancoso, Bernier, Drogba, you need someone to come in, someone new that'll bring that experience, and they don't have that person yet in the organization.
Just circling back to Mancoso, Kels, I mean, it's an incredible story, really, when you think about it, because, you know, here he comes in, much like Drogba last year in the middle of the season, and just goes on, you know, a complete tear. Has scored a lot of goals, has scored, I think it's 3 goals in the 2 playoff games so far, scored that fabulous winner against the Red Bulls, was dynamite against DC United in the first round. But was it, I mean, maybe it's an obvious question, but was it right for Biello to give him the start ahead of Drogba? I mean, did he sort of earn it, even over a player of Drogba's repute?
I mean, he definitely earned it. Yeah, don't get me wrong. He definitely earned it. You know, I was asked when Mancuso was brought on initially, I was asked by a couple of people, is this the guy to replace Drogba going forward? And I didn't even have to hear the end of that sentence before I said, no, absolutely not. And obviously, I was maybe not dead wrong, but he definitely proved me wrong. I mean, he came in as a substitute in his first game and scored within a couple of minutes. So I think I was I was wrong pretty early on. But yeah, just back to the TFC game, I think he earned the start. And for Biello, why try to fix something that's not broken? The formation is clicking. The lineup is clicking. In Biello's mind, Drogba is able to come in and bring that extra punch of energy in the last half hour. And Mancuso is just working so well with Piatti. Don't try to mess that up. So I don't think the decision was wrong. I think Mancuso has earned it. And if this little tweak that he suffered in practice yesterday is not major, he's definitely earned the start against the Red Bulls on Sunday.
We're joined by Sportsnet's Kelsey Patterson. Kelsey, I remember a couple of years ago now, those great Champions League runs by Montreal. The city did, in many ways, embrace that football club. There's a lot of stories, there's personalities, you know, it's a good team. But, of course, the Canadiens are playing pretty well this season as well. Yeah. Is there much hype around town about this run right now? Are people talking about the Montreal impact?
Yeah, I mean, listen, not as much as the Montreal Canadiens, as you say, and it's probably, unfortunately, something like 5-1 or even 10-1, right? The number of people who are talking Habs versus Impact, which hurts me because I've always been a soccer guy. It hurts me personally because we're talking start of the season for the Canadiens and we're talking playoffs for the Impact. So it definitely hurts a little bit, but what I have noticed that I hadn't noticed earlier, and even in the Champions League run, what I hadn't noticed is Impact sweaters, Impact jerseys, Impact bags. And I'm not saying by the boatload, but I'm noticing logos in the street just walking home that I hadn't noticed last year or a few years from now. So there's definitely, I don't know if it's a buzz for the playoffs if you're walking in downtown Montreal, but there's definitely more awareness that well, there's a team and they're doing well, and it's okay to be proud of them and support them, and it's okay not be, to be full hockey. So that's definitely a little bit of a change. But I wouldn't go and say buzz, which is super unfortunate given where they are right now.
Yeah, the timing is just poor with the Canadians, unfortunately. Yeah. Kelsey, before we let you go, give us your thoughts on Sunday. How do you see the game breaking down? What does Montreal have to do to get a result to advance to the Eastern Conference Final?
Yeah, get a result. Get a result in a place where they've never won. 0-7-1 all time, I believe, at Red Bull Arena. I guess the good news is they haven't won there. Not a lot of teams have won there, but they don't have to win. 0-0, 1-1 could be enough. So I think for the Impact, don't open yourself up, which is easier said than done. And at the same time, don't sit back. So it's just kind of find a balance between not opening up, not sitting back. I think sitting back will hurt them. If they just let the Red Bulls come at them, that'll hurt them big time. So find a balance between that and, who knows, play counterattacking football. You get a goal and you sit back on that and you might be okay. So, and I'd say slow the game down too. It's not exactly the type of soccer that I like to watch, a slow game or a time-wasting game. And I'm not saying fake injuries or anything like that, but one thing that they did really well against BC is they took their time and they were patient, and it's an extra 5 seconds here on the throw-in, an extra 5 seconds there on the goal kick, and it matters.
Game management.
That'll help in the end.
Game management, I understand. Breaking news here. Apparently, Biello said today that Drogba has left training early because he felt stiffness in his back.
Oh, no. What a surprise. Oh,
yeah. So wow. It'll be interesting to see how that develops out. And, I mean, God, if Mancuso and Drogba both can't play, then that's really something.
Then you got a problem. And who knows, right? I mean, whole conspiracy theory is this. Is this true? Is it his back actually hurting,
right?
Or is this a way for the club to get out of it cleanly, I guess, if Drogba doesn't want to play? Who knows?
Well, let's hope for a Montreal-Toronto FC conference final.
Be something. Sure
MLS would love that,
wouldn't
they?
Yeah.
Well, I'd love that for one reason, because it would mean John Molinaro coming back to Montreal.
Oh, you know how I love the city.
Is Montreal ready for him?
Not quite. It's we're easing our way into it every time he comes, but we'll try to get ready.
I always give them notice when I come, so
yeah.
I'm sure they tidy up.
Kelsey, thanks so much, mate. I hope your boys win this weekend, and we'll chat to you soon, hopefully.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
That is Kelsey Patterson of Sportsnet. Yeah, you know what, JMO, it's going to be an interesting tilt if you go back to the first leg in Montreal. New York didn't play badly.
No,
they had the ball. They had possession. It's kind of one of those games. They couldn't create too much. I think it was just, seven or eight real chances on goal.
Right.
They're a very good team, though.
Very good.
They've been proving that throughout the season. Even up 1-0, you think New York is the favorite in this one, huh?
I still think the Eastern Conference goes through Red Bull Arena. I still think they're the team to beat on this side of the bracket, although a certain argument could be made for Toronto, but we'll get into that soon enough.
Yeah, although apparently TFC's players aren't good enough to make any finals lists. What do you make up of the MLS? I mean, honestly, individual awards,
meaningless.
I don't take them too seriously, but it's for an ego, a club's ego. It's tough to argue why the guys that made the lists weren't there, but come on, you have to slide in a certain Javinko.
Yeah, I mean, Javinko is certainly an MVP candidate, and Drew Moore is certainly a Defender of the Year candidate. But, you know, it was down to training yesterday, and we were talking to the players and the coach, and it's a non-issue. Like, they really don't care about it. It's, you know, the old cliche, they want to win a championship and that's their trophy. So
yeah,
doesn't matter.
Bit of adversity, a bit of paranoia about conspiracies help a club as well, I think. So if they can use this to say, you know what?
Sure.
Everyone's against us. No one likes us. It may not be a bad thing.
Yeah, that could be.
Let's move on to some Toronto FC talk, shall we?
Cool.
All right. It was good.
He was good, eh?
Yeah. Good energy.
He's a really good soccer guy.
We're now joined by a man you know well from the Fan 590, Dan Riccio, host of TFC Pitchside. You can catch that Mondays at 11 p.m. or you can download it, which is, let's be honest, much easier. Dan, welcome to the show, pal.
How's it going, James? John?
It's going great. It's going really good. We're buying into the hype right now of MLS playoffs, transcending all North American sport. as we speak. In fairness, it is
now that the Cubs are done. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you mentioned. Ooh, Dan, you don't mention.
Don't bring that
on the
up.
Show, you know, J-Mo is. He's not a big fan of that.
I would get to J-Mo.
What are your thoughts on the Cubs ending the 100?
All right. Let's move on.
All right, Dan. Now listen, there is some hype though building. I mean, listen, it's not quite mainstream. It's getting pretty close though. But TFC certainly getting some copy, getting some press recently. Now, from a level of success for this club, this is uncharted territory. At this point, no matter what happens, do you think the club sees it as a successful season?
I would think so. I think they just really needed to get past that wild card stage, at least for me. You know, it just kind of validated everything that happened throughout the year. The improvement on defense, the team ethos, you know, everything that was talked about at the end of last year, I felt like it kind of got validated by that win over Philly. And now to keep it going and you go up against a New York team who has always kind of been your bogey team over the last couple of years, and you beat them in the first leg. It feels like this season was a success, but at the same time, if they find a way to lose this tie now after having such an advantage after the first leg, people are going to come away pretty disappointed.
Yeah, hashtag so TSC. You're right. and I agree with you, Dan. I mean, certainly getting over the hump by beating Philly, that was huge. But also, I thought the last match, beating New York at home, you know, the way they beat them, that may have been the first time we began to exorcise some demons from the past, because they were the better team against a team also with some big stars.
Yeah, and it kind of brought up the demons of, oh my God, we're dominating this game, but we can't score. And there was that brief kind of 5 minutes there in the 75 to 80 minute mark there before they scored, where New York had a couple of good chances on the counter, and you thought, oh boy, is this going to happen now? Like, what's going on here? But they were able to weather that storm, and then Banny, I think, made a very astute tactical decision to bring in to St. Ricketts and bring on that extra forward, and clearly, like, New York's defense just didn't know how to deal with that extra man in their area, and it changed the game completely. So it brought up a lot of old feelings that this could get out of hand, and the pressure was kind of mounting, frustration was mounting, and then the soft hand touch of Greg Vanney kind of pushed them back into the right direction. And I thought from all facets of the game, front to back on the field and even on the coach's bench, it was one of the best performances in TFC history.
Dan, you know, the game and on last weekend, and certainly, you know, the return match at Yankee Stadium on Sunday, not without some controversy. David Villa kicking out at Armando Cooper. You know, by precedence, he probably should have been suspended by the league's disciplinary committee, but they ruled earlier this week that he's going to be available to play on this weekend. You were down at training with me yesterday. You know, we asked Greg Vanney and Michael Bradley both the same question, and Bradley essentially said he actually liked the decision, because if this is the start of the league sort of, you know, not re-refereeing games on Monday mornings, then he's okay with it. Pretty mature attitude by all accounts. I mean, he kind of sees the big picture, but I wonder if he's going to feel the same way should Damon Villa score a hat trick on Sunday. Well, where do you come down on this? I mean, what did you make of, you know, the decision not to suspend him?
Yeah, I mean, and I read your piece on Sportsnet.ca, John, and it's, you know, it is great of Michael Bradley to say that. And when we spoke to Nick Hagelin on TFC Pitch Side this week, he kind of said not the same thing, but he said he hoped that David Villa would play so that when they eventually win this tie, New York's got no excuses to make. And I thought, you know, it's a bit of brash confidence coming from this TFC side. They want to beat New York when they're at their best. And I like that about them. But as far as Bradley goes, you know, like at the same time that I agree with him and I don't necessarily like what the disciplinary committee has done over the course of the season, I mean, if that's basically any other player on the pitch, they're serving a suspension for the second leg.
Yeah, I mean, there's a double
standard. That's the thing that Bradley never really got to.
Right. There's a double standard here. And, you know, I don't think, you know, how anyone can sort of come to another conclusion. It's beyond me.
Although if Bradley had come out and criticized the league, you know, he gets suspended for this game, and then
yeah, well,
oh no, sorry, he's a superstar too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, wouldn't happen. But yeah, this seriously some question marks with MLS, and I think we can all agree that was definitely
But is it just MLS? Like, if that's the NBA or the National Football League, the NHL, certainly. Like, if Sidney Crosby were to do something stupid in a Stanley Cup playoff game, would he get a suspension? Probably not. He'd probably get a slap on the wrist and say, don't do it again. You know? I don't know if that's just Major League Soccer, right?
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point. I'm not sure that it's exclusive to MLS. But the larger issue here is, you know, having, you know, one standard for the regular season where, you know, in September, Cooper was sent off for, you know, kicking out at Felipe, which was pretty innocuous. And not two months later, Villa does something far worse to Cooper. I think we could all agree.
I personally, you know, I've heard the argument, and I got to tell you, I think Cooper was, that was worse.
Oh, kick he out sold
than,
it.
Than Villa.
Really?
No. The Cooper, the little kick out when he got suspended.
Really?
Was worse than Villa. Because that was completely premeditated. All right. Whereas Villa, and I'm not condoning it at all, but that was, you know, heat of the moment. It was stupid. It was unlike him.
Right.
Certainly earlier in the game as well. I mean, I think people are blowing out of proportion a little bit, the Villa. It was hardly this vicious, awful attack on a prone player.
Right? And I don't think either one is all that vicious. It's not malicious. You know, they're certainly not trying to injure the opponent, just give him a little tap, say, hey, I'm here, kind of thing. You know, it's not really, to me, I think people do blow it out of proportion in the sense that it's way too much. I mean, but I do kind of feel like, you know, a lot of it is, like we've already talked about, and all of it is the name on the back of the jersey and the team that David Villa plays for, and who's playing in the primetime game on Sunday. It's TFC against New York City FC. You know, they want their best players. They want this to probably be an exciting tie when it comes down to it, to try and grab as many casual audience as they possibly can. And really, this whole thing has happened, and it's kind of worked out in Major League Soccer's favor, because what have we been talking about all week? What do people who don't normally watch MLS now clinging to? They're clinging to the whole Toronto versus everybody kind of mantra that has been with the Blue Jays and has been with the Raptors over the last couple of years. Like, how come these major leagues always seem to make decisions against us in the moments that matter most?
I think the most frustrating part for me, though, this week is having to explain to new fans of the game how the away goals rule works. Oh, God.
Or how aggregate works.
Oh, that as well. Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so frustrating. But I guess we should just embrace the fact that the others are talking about it. The game itself, though, you know, it's on that little postage stamp of a field at Yankee Stadium. How do you think, does that play into TFC more? Do you think, now I know, you know, New York's played really well at home. I think since June the 2nd, they played great. 24 goals for, 7 against, 7 wins, 1 draw. They are scoring goals for fun, but a smaller pitch, a narrow pitch, it is easier to bunker in, you would think, wouldn't you, for a TFC team?
Yeah, I think what it really comes down to is mistakes on the field. Like, you can't afford to have turnovers, because they can quickly just turn around and end up in the back of your net on a transition. So you really have to be careful with the ball. And I think for TFC, it's also a good thing that there is a lot of goals scored on that pitch, because, hey, you get one, New York's got to get 4. And guess what? TFC's only lost by multiple goals one time this year.
Right.
So it's. I think it works out in favor of TFC. Even if they do give up a couple of goals, they should probably get one against this New York side.
Dan, obviously, you know, Jose Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco scoring goals and setting up goals in the playoffs and, you know, certainly down the stretch of the regular season. Seba not so much, but certainly Jose. So, you know, they're obviously key players, and they're sort of what's driving the team forward in terms of the attack. But, my goodness, Michael Bradley. I don't know that he's had a better stretch these last 5, 6, 7 games. I don't know that he's had a better stretch during his TFC days. What's been your evaluation of him late in the regular season and in these two playoff games?
Well, especially the game against New York. Against Philly, I think that was a typical Michael Bradley game. You saw him facilitating the attack. And, you know, Philly, at times, they're kind of a punchless team. So when it came down to it against New York, he wasn't great moving the ball forward in a sense. You know, I think his passing completion percentage was around 70 for the game, which is low for him. And you didn't see him make those defense splitting passes all the time. But really, how many times was he the guy getting back and intervening on a New York attack. How many ball recoveries did he make? How many interceptions did he make? How many clean tackles did he make? I think he only fouled one player in the entire match. And being on a yellow card, too, it just goes to show the level of his mentality, knowing that he has to be careful in his challenges, and yet he was still very efficient with them. It was by far, I think, the best defensive performance we've seen out of Michael Bradley, and really the reason why they were able to shut down New York offensively. And I don't know, like, I even during the game, I still get tweets from fans that despise Michael Bradley. Like, I don't know if you guys get that as well.
Oh, but, yeah.
He's a polarizing figure for sure.
It's mind-boggling. I don't know how you don't watch that New York game.
It's only
and
about
not think he was the best player.
It's all about the money.
Yeah,
it comes down to that, right? If he's making $400,000 a year,
well,
everyone loves him.
It's that, but and I wrote about this too. You know what I think it is? I mean, it's that. I also think his is a very nuanced, subtle game. Right? Mm-hmm. He's not a goal scorer. He's not someone who's going to dribble around players like Seven score. You know, great goals. He's not, you know, Clint Irwin making saves. He doesn't do a lot of flashy things, but
you know what, you know,
in terms of influence, none bigger.
No one looks less like N'Golo Kanté on the face of the earth than Michael Bradley, yet perhaps no one looks more like him on the field at times, you know, within the context of MLS. And you know, I'll tell you this much, though, boys, I say this. If he leaves this offseason, and there's rumors out there, you've all heard them, TFC, though, isn't going to spend $6 million on a defensive midfielder. Right?
No.
That's a fact.
It won't happen again, and not in that same sense. And it would be very difficult to replace him. Is he irreplaceable? I don't think so. But the way these last two games, the way he's kind of felt like just the absolute heart and soul of this team, and you know, you kind of lose that feeling. I understand some supporters probably lose that feeling, especially over the course of the summer when he's off at the World Cup or he's off at the Gold Cup or he's off at the Copa America. Like, he's just always seemingly missing big chunks of the season to be off with the U.S. national team. And so I think that's part of everything that gets talked about with Michael Bradley, and that he's not always there for this team, even though he is the captain. And then part of it is, and I know this is a Toronto thing, and doing shows on the Fan, generic shows, and talking about baseball and hockey and different stuff. People always in this city seem to dislike guys that don't show emotion. And maybe that's something for the generic sports fan. And Bradley does show emotion, but at times he doesn't really wear his heart on his sleeve. And after they beat Philly that night, that Wednesday night at BMO, you saw some great pictures of just the absolute joy and emotion on Michael Bradley's face. And I think that kind of goes a long way to gaining some of his fans back that he may have lost over the last couple of years.
And you've seen it in training as I have, Dan. Like, he can be distant. Like, he can be, I don't know that I've ever covered an athlete as focused, as intense as Michael Bradley.
That's the word, intense.
Like, it's unreal. The guy's discipline is just unreal. But lately, there's smiling, there's laughing. It's like, where has this Michael Bradley been? Instead of, you know, I mean, we've all been on the end of like the death stare from him from time to time, but he's been pretty upbeat.
He stares right through your soul, doesn't he?
Oh, God, man, he doesn't like me.
Yeah, I mean, you often upset him early in his career here, JMO. I know he stared you down a few times.
Oh, more than a few times.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's one of the more thoughtful interviews.
Absolutely.
You can find, you know, post-match, I mean, he's there for a while, you know, and you're trying to get something out of him. And he's so contemplative. He's actually one of those rare examples of an athlete who actually seems to care what he's going to say to the media.
No, he does really choose his words carefully, and he knows when he has to be brutally honest. I remember it was probably, I guess it was his first year here, 2014, and TFC had a run of games where it seemed like the referee was blowing it, for lack of a better term. And finally he came out and he took a big fine for it. But he came out and said that the refereeing in this league absolutely has to get better. He chooses his points very carefully when he has to make a point known and send a message. And I think that's something that you like about him as well. And the whole thing about Michael Bradley, again, is that this team, as much as Sebastian Davinco and Josie Altidore are scoring the goals and putting it in the back of the net, There's no one on this team that means more than Michael Bradley. And I think that was pretty evident yesterday when Drew Moore was talking and just saying, you know, you see that look in Michael Bradley's eye and you want to be like him. You want to get that feeling from him and you want to play as intense as he does. And I think it's a conscious decision from Michael to maybe show more emotion lately than he has in the past and not always be that intense character because, like you said, he can seem distant when he's like that. And it seems like it has been a bit of a conscious decision to show more emotion and be a little bit more comfortable to approach, in a sense, from the media and also I think from the fans, just to see that emotion.
Yeah, when he talks about the fans, you do see him smile occasionally.
He lights up.
So, well, look, he's, well, I wouldn't say he lights up. Yeah. That's a bit of a stretch.
Relatively speaking, for Michael Bradley, he lights up.
Relatively speaking, sure. He cracks a smile.
Yeah.
Or maybe a grimace. I don't know. But it's a smile, maybe.
It's a smile.
While we're on the warm and fuzzy topic here, is there any more story more warm and fuzzy than Greg Vanney right now? You know, it's amazing. 2 years ago, he comes into the job and everyone's saying, oh, God, who's this guy? You know, another guy from California. What's he done? Typical TFC. And here we are now. He's going to get a new contract. He deserves a new contract. You mentioned how, you know, tactically he got it bang on last match. Even John Molinaro's a convert to Greg Vanney as a coach these days.
Oh, I've long been a convert, yeah.
Well, I won't say long. This season.
Yeah, this
season. You were very... I won't say you...
I wasn't...
You were intelligent in your analysis of the hire.
I was skeptical when he first got hired. And even last year as the season progressed. But I think he's grown into the role. And I think he's proven himself to be a good coach. And I'm with you. I think he deserves, and I'm sure, well, hear what Dan has to say, but I think he deserves all the success that he's had, and he deserves a contract extension.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if anybody's doubting it at this point, I mean, you're just not watching the team.
Vanney out.
it again goes back to the whole Michael Bradley thing and how people complain about him. Like, they're still complaining about Greg Vanney even today, and I don't know how you do that. I mean, he's so calm, and he's brought along so many young players. You know, it's easy to coach Sebastian Giovinco and Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley, sure. Those guys are going to be fine, and they're going to make your team better. But I think you look at the improvements of Jonathan Osorio over the last couple of years. You look at the improvement of Nick Haglund this year alone, and even Eric Zavaleta. I mean, he's made a player out of Eric Zavaleta, and Siggy Schmidt over in Seattle couldn't. So I think the development of the young players is really one of Vanney's calling cards in his first couple of years here at TFC. And as well as it goes with Michael Bradley, you know, Bradley kind of feels like a second coach for this team and the coach on the field. And I think that's helped Greg through his time here as well. And he's certainly grown into the job. I mean, there's always going to be growing pains with a guy who's in his first gig as a head coach. But I think Vanney has grown a lot, and he's shown a tactical astuteness that, you know, there's other coaches in the league that maybe don't have it. You know, I was reading up on some stuff about the Philadelphia Union today, who I guess were cleaning out their lockers and talking about how they use the same 4-2-3-1 system all season long and how that was a good thing, even though they just got torched towards the end of the season and didn't decide to try and cover up their weaknesses. But, you know, Greg Vanney has found ways to cover up the team's weaknesses throughout the course of the season. And to be honest, I may be way wrong on this, but, you know, the diamond wasn't working during that 5-game winless run. And I kind of felt, now I feel like Vanney was holding off the 3-5-2 just because he didn't want opposing teams to maybe get so much video on it. And now he's using it. And it seems like the perfect system for this team to use right now.
Yeah, who'd have thought a year ago that Zavaleta and Haglund would be starting on the most important games in club history? You know,
good point.
It's amazing.
Well, Dan, Nick Haglund, I went to go watch him play with TFC2 a couple of times this year. You know, he really, and at that time, you know, Nick was, who is one of the most happy-go-lucky guys you'll ever meet. He did seem a bit down in the dumps on where his career was headed, and now you look at him, and he. I mean, to me, of the three in the back line, I mean, they were all pretty good in leg one, but Nick was just an absolute monster in that first leg.
Yeah, great pickups by Bezpachenko. And I've got to ask quickly before we leave you there, and I want to get J-Mo here, because you wrote a great column, I think today on sportsnet.ca about TFC and where they're at now and where
Michael
they
Grange,
from.
Actually.
Was it Grange?
Yep.
Was it? Okay, well, the word was used wonkish.
Yeah.
To describe
Michael Grange.
It was Grange. Okay, so he's describing Tim Bezpachenko, and he called him the wonkish Tim Bezpachenko. Best word I've ever heard in my life. No idea what it means. What does it mean?
I have no idea. What does wonkish mean? I think of Willy Wonka.
Like, yeah, so I thought, me too, when I first heard it.
Just means that he's kind of a nerdy kind of guy and kind of.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
But not in a derogatory way. Just like someone who's kind of like, you know, a thoughtful, smart, kind of sharp guy.
Nerd.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been called wankish before, but not
no,
wonkish.
No, wonkish. Quite different.
Yeah? Very different.
It's a compliment, believe me.
Okay, good. Dan, thanks, mate. Enjoyed this. We'll chat to you soon. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for the chat.
Cheers.
That's Dan Riccio of the Fan 590 and, of course, TFC Pitchside must-listen radio and podcast for you TFC fans out there. You know what is a story that hasn't been taught too much, but I think it's a big one this year, is how we're seeing like the Osorios of the world.
Right.
We're seeing some kids, you know, getting a chance on the bench in particular.
Jay Chapman,
yeah, exactly. But just the academy's doing what it's supposed to do. And I think this is the first year we've really, maybe a little bit last year, but this season we're really seeing these kids getting a chance.
Yeah, Mo Babuli, another one, although he's certainly kind of fallen off the depth chart lately. But yeah, I think, you know.
It's important.
That's
in this league, you need, it's so rare that teams build through the draft.
Sure.
But in this league, ideally, that's what you do.
Well, and especially in this league where it's a salary cap league, where you can't go out and spend, you know, X amount of dollars and build your, you have to supplement it with, you know, other ways, whether it's through the draft or homegrown players or your academy. And, you know, let's be honest, they've sunk a lot of money into their academy system and the training facility up at Downsview. It's, you know, it's among the best in the league, if not the best. So, yeah, obviously they want to sort of turn out, you know, academy kids on a regular basis, and they seem to be doing it. So that's a very good positive for the team going forward.
When players come over from Europe just to take a look at the club,
their eyes open up when they go to that training facility.
They're blown away by it.
Yeah.
And that is top quality.
It is.
That's comparable to the biggest clubs in world football.
Yeah. I mean, I've you know, Jermaine Defoe would often say that, you know, the training facilities at TFC would, you know, rival or surpass anything, you know, at any Premier League.
I've been to Melwood at Liverpool before, and it's Melwood. It's legendary. But
sure.
Tell you what, Kia.
Is it a dump?
Looks pretty. I wouldn't say it's a dump, but I prefer Kia.
Well, there you go.
That's for sure. I love how they have the three trophy cabinets too. One has the Voyagers Cup, and there's two empty. One's for the CONCACAF Champions League, one's for MLS Cup.
No pressure there.
No pressure whatsoever. Like, you got to walk past that.
The players see that every time they go into the cafeteria. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. But hey, listen, it's all psychology, right?
Right.
But I think it's been a fun season, and I suspect it's going to continue post this weekend.
You know what? You used the right word there. It has been fun.
And shouldn't it be fun?
Yeah, I mean, like, and God knows, like, after the first 8 years that we had to put up through this, and, you know, some longer than up, some more than others, myself covering this team, it's been, you know, it was a, you know, soul-sapping job at times. It really
there
was.
There should be a media wall of fame at BMO, and you should have your name front and center, Jim. You and Neil Davidson, I think, for covering the team closest of anyone from day one.
I don't know about that, but let me just tell you, like, there was more than one time where I thought, you know what, I'm chucking this in. I can't deal with this anymore. Because honestly, I was just so.
Oh, I know.
It's depressing. It really was.
There were times in years past where I wanted the team to lose because I knew they had to hit rock bottom because it was so poorly managed.
Right.
And I hated that because, you know, we're not fans of the team. We want the team to do well.
Sure,
we live
absolutely.
In the market, you know, and you cover them so closely. But there were times they were a very unlikable bunch
around
TFC.
Question.
They were not
absolutely.
Nice.
No.
You know, and it was a pain in the ass covering them. They were terrible. And it was just, man, this team's got to hit rock bottom. And they
were
hit
not
rock bottom.
Good. They were not good to deal with.
Not
no
at all.
Question. But
and
that's
night and day.
Night and day. Absolutely.
And day.
So, and they, like I said, they've been fun to watch. It's fun when they win, but they're playing, you know, fun football, and it's been great to cover, you know.
Yes.
Like, hallelujah. Thank God.
Yeah, no kidding. And listen, if they win this weekend or don't lose, you know, by more than 2-0, blah, 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 we get a trip to either Montreal or New York again.
Yeah.
Not so bad.
No.
Not
and,
so bad
And
at all.
You know what? It's the way that the West is kind of shaping up because both Dallas and Colorado lost.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get it eliminated and Toronto somehow, like, wins the East, then Toronto hosts
Home
MLS
Field,
Cup.
December 10th.
Wouldn't that be something?
But isn't that Grey Cup weekend?
I think it would be after Grey Cup.
Was it?
Yeah. I think the Grey Cup.
No, conference finals maybe.
Conference final, there might be some sort of but they'll work that.
Well, those 6,000 Grey Cup fans can go somewhere else.
All right, easy.
You a CFL fan?
No, I'm not, but...
Well, then don't defend them.
No, I want to defend
them. Whose side are you on?
I am no side in that fight.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that. I did. Thanks, Jomo.
Yeah, thanks. Now, that was fun.
It was, yeah. It's good to get some good MLS chat with Kelsey Patterson, Dan Riccio. There is no podcast again on Monday. I'm sorry. I'm
you
away.
Slackers.
Bobby's away. Just we're away. It's just, what can we say? And we miss it, but we'll be back.
We'll be back next
with a vengeance. We will very, very soon. But in the meantime, check out sportsnet.ca for all your footballing needs. And, of course, on Sunday and Saturday, lots of coverage of the English Premier League on Sportsnet across the network.
And it should be said, you and I will be in New York all weekend covering TFC.
Reports, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have regular coverage on sportsnet.ca. So, check it out.
Yep, we will live stream our Saturday night piss up, right?
I don't know about that, no? But okay. You and I will have a discussion off air.
We shall. All right, hope you enjoyed that. Cheers, bye.